What the Tech is brought to you by ButcherBox. To receive $10 off plus free bacon for life, go to ButcherBox.com and click on the big bacon banner on the homepage and enter Andrew10 at checkout. Go now, limited time offer. Mack Weldon, a premium menswear essentials brand that believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and easy shopping. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com and use the promo code Andrew at checkout. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, Mr. Paul Thorod. How you doing, Paul?
I'm pretty good.
Oh, look at that. We got an I'm at the pretty good today.
Sorry.
Yeah, how you been? Last week we did the show and I was at work. Actually, you know what? That setup was not bad at all.
Right, from the dungeon.
I got a lot of messages from people saying, like, how did you do the show from your office? And I think I'll talk about that a little bit. You know, that's like my little mobile podcast setup that I have now. And I can't believe over the last couple of years that we've been doing this, how easy it's gotten. You know, like it's so simple to just go on the air and do a show.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the only idiot now that has, you know, a $20,000, $30,000, whatever it is, audio setup, and have these HD cameras that I'm only using one of now, and all these computers. It's gotten so simple. Like right now, somebody was asking earlier, how do you send video to Paul? We don't use Skype anymore.
Right.
We use something called vMix Call, which is built into the production system that we have. So maybe we could touch on that a little bit if we have some time at the end of the show. But I do have a lot to talk about. But how was your week, Paul? Was it good?
How was my week? It was good. We had family in over the weekend visiting. You know, it was nice. How Very about nice. You?
It was hectic as usual. You know, I don't think you made a boo-boo. You never told me how difficult life gets.
Well,
with kids.
The only thing I when my kids were little, I remember talking to people who had older kids, teenagers or whatever. And I said something like, well, this gets better at some point, right? And they said, no, actually, it gets worse. And the only thing I think I would have said this to you, but if I haven't, there is a moment that will happen for you in the next couple of years where your daughter, who is older, will be able to get up by herself on a Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah,
and go downstairs if your bedroom's upstairs, and get her cereal or whatever, and watch TV or whatever, you know. And because she's able to do that, she can do it with your son, and you guys will get to sleep in.
That's amazing.
When that happens, that will be the greatest thing that's ever happened to you. And then you need to understand that that's the apex; that it's all downhill after that.
I don't know. I don't know what to do anymore. I'm so tired. I'm so tired. But I am not tired to talk about a lot of these things. One thing, Google released a desktop, I guess, a web-based messenger.
Yeah.
Which you finally use, which I do want to talk about that. That's actually some really cool stuff, because we've been, how long has it been that we've been talking about this?
I don't, how long has iMessage been available on the Mac?
Yeah.
since then.
Yeah, we've been talking about this. This is the Holy Grail. For quite some time, but I do want to take a moment before we go deep into it and talk about our great sponsor, and that's ButcherBox. I mean, I spoke about these guys a couple of weeks ago, and I got this, and I'll tell you how this thing comes. It's awesome. You go on their website, and it's essentially like a box of meat. You could pick, and you could customize. You can pick whatever you want. It's super easy, and I'm going to explain what comes in the box and how you do it, but he has a great offer. You get $10 off, plus free bacon for life. Free bacon for life by going to butcherbox.com and clicking on the big bacon banner on the homepage and entering the code Andrew10 at checkout. Go there. It's limited time offer. But essentially what happens is you curate what you want, right? You could either mix and match. You could pick, you know, just beef, or you can mix it with chicken and pork, or you could customize it however you want. And the meat is frozen at peak freshness in its own individual vacuum-sealed bag. By the way, the bag is biodegradable also. Each box is shipped with careful calculation with the amount of dry ice to ensure it remains frozen after it reaches your doorstep. So it doesn't matter if you live in Arizona or New York, they know how much of this to put there, and it could sit there for a little bit. All the meat is delivered right to your doorstep for free. It's extremely high quality. It's grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken. So you know it's good stuff. No antibiotics, no hormones, none of that. And this is just in time. You know, this is the time to be grilling. This is the time that you're barbecuing. And it's a perfect, perfect gift. And it's a perfect gift for yourself. I highly recommend it. I have a couple things I'm doing here. I got these pork chops from them that I'm going to grill. I actually took it out to defrost, and I'm following the instructions on how to defrost this thing. It's not, you don't just drop it in hot water. These aren't, you know, your sale level quality meat that you buy at the grocery store. These are phenomenal stuff. ButcherBox.com. You click on the big bacon banner on the homepage and you enter the code Andrew10 at checkout, and you'll receive $10 off plus free bacon for life. You can't go wrong with that, guys. Free bacon for life. ButcherBox.com. Enter the code Andrew10 at checkout. I want to thank them for supporting the show. yes, Paul, I want your opinion on this messenger.
Okay.
So Google finally, but it's web-based, right? It's a web-based, it's Chrome-based, and it's Google's messenger service for the web. So I want to get your opinion of this.
I mean, I think it works great. It's, you know, in Chrome on Windows, and I believe actually now on the Mac and the latest version, and also on Linux and on Chrome OS, I should say. You can, of course, save websites shortcuts, right? You can pin them to your taskbar. You can run them in their own window. So it kind of looks and works like an app.
Yeah.
And, you know, it works like you talked about AirText a few weeks ago. I've been testing that actually ever since. One of the things I really like about AirText is that it works like instantaneously. It's crazy good performance. You do have to pay for it, of course, unless you want to have the little... This message actually was sent with AirText.
By the way, I've started encountering some issues with AirText.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, I started getting some delays, and it's weird. It only happens at my job. It doesn't happen when I'm at home. I'm curious if it has some weird thing to do with the Wi-Fi or the provisions with that, but I am having some weird issues where I won't get a message on it for like a day, and then I'll just get everything later. So I don't know. I noticed this last week. After we did the show, so I wanted to bring it up, but this obviously this is Google service running within its own app, right?
Yeah, I don't know, right? I'm not sure how it works. You know, AirText puts a processor on your phone that runs in the background and intercepts things. And I've never noticed any battery life issues or performance problems, but I'm not sure how the Google solution works exactly. But it works great, and it's instantaneous. It does everything I would have expected of it. It looks exactly like Messenger does on Android, right? It's excellent. I mean, this is so useful. I haven't done this in a long time. I've actually added, this is something I will now install on every computer I use. It's just too useful not to use this.
Yeah, so I'm going to install this today. I haven't done it yet, but yeah, I'm curious.
Well, you got to make sure you can get it. That's the one issue. So I told my wife about this, and she was really excited to get it. And when you first install messages, at least right now, you might not have the option to use the web version yet, but it appears over a couple of days.
Oh, interesting.
If you're already using Android messages, you probably do have it by now if it was already installed.
No, I'm using the Samsung stuff.
Yeah, that's what's
which is also called messages.
Of course.
Google messages. Let's see. Android messages. I'm sorry, not Google messages. Android messages. Yeah. It's so convoluted, right? All the apps are all called the same. And why can't we just have one thing?
Well, I mean, this is the app I was already using. So to me, this is text messaging. And I love that it's the same. I mean, that's one. Not that AirText was bad, right? AirText has got a fine UI. It works great and everything. But that the Google messages for the web looks and works exactly like, you know, the version on.
So I got a question. Why do you prefer this messaging app?
Why do I prefer it?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a why. It is the default Android app, so it's what you get on the Pixel, and it works. It's not something I've ever used and said, "Oh, this doesn't meet some need. I should look at other things." Like, it works fine.
So I got the prompt, Android Messages.android.com. Android. Oh, you let's did. Do this live. Yeah, well, yeah. Let's do this live.
Did not get it.
Okay. So allow says on your phone. Oh, I got to scan a QR code. Wow, yep. That was a really quick scan. And I'm all set. Done. Wow. Yep. So how do I pop this up? You know how I do this?
What's going on here?
Did you get a PayPal?
No.
Because Jeff would be nice. Just PayPal'd you.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Okay, so it's loading. It's having trouble loading, but we'll see what happens here. But it is interesting that we're finally getting some sort of unified version of this, of messaging. But I don't know. Do you think the future of this would be in its own window? Like its own, do you think it should be its own app, or do you think it's fine being its own within Chrome?
Oh, this is fine. Absolutely all it needs to be. There's no, well, I guess you could make the argument, if it worked offline, you could kind of compose a text and then send it when you were online. But I mean, come on, like it's no, this is fine. I this is all I want. I'm so happy they did this.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah.
And I won't leave if they get SMS right with this. All right?
No promises.
Yeah, no promises there. Last week.
Well, I mean, I've used it. I've sent pictures. I've sent emojis. I've sent stickers, which is kind of a Google messaging app. You know, it does all the stuff, you know.
It does everything you need it to do, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I would say.
You know, we've been talking about this, and I got a lot of messages from people that say, who text messages anymore? I don't use text message. And I use Skype, or I use WhatsApp, or I use Kick, or I use whatever.
I
got a lot of that. And it was interesting. And I was talking to John Prosser about this. I was like, do people not text anymore? He's like, dude, I haven't sent a text in like 3 months. I use Facebook Messenger.
See, I'm sorry, but I don't like this kind of response that people have, and I don't mean John in particular, but you know, the whole who sends text messages anymore. Well, actually, millions and millions of people probably. It's probably the single most popular text messaging service on earth. So it's the one thing I really don't like about mobile and just about messaging, I guess, maybe more specifically, is how many things there are. And one thing I'm getting ready to boycott, frankly, is Facebook Messenger, which I hate.
Yeah. I'm not crazy about it. You know what's interesting? I don't like it that everybody could message me.
I don't like it that a little circle appears on my screen with a little, with the little guy in it. And it's like, my problem is I have people that use different ways of communicating. Like you and I, let's see, if I was going to New York and you and I were trying to get in touch with each other,
I have that
probably
problem
send
with
a text
you.
Message.
I have that problem with you, by the way, because I have three phone numbers for you. So it's always a confusion as to where I message you.
But
I would send you a text message. I say, where are you? Meeting you wherever.
I use text messages all the time. I use text messages more than phone calls, for sure. We use Skype out of necessity. It's like one of the things that a lot of the people I know use. So if I'm talking to Brad or Mary Jo or Mahedi, Raphael or whoever, we're on Skype. It's just no one really likes it. It's just the kind of thing we use. I do use Skype on mobile. In fact, I have it on my home screen because it's just too prominent. I can't escape it. But these other third-party messaging apps, I just want nothing to do with any of these things. I don't like having other ways to do the same thing.
I like having the option to. I just don't like doing it.
This is a problem on work trips, especially when everyone from work is there. And some people will text me on Skype. Some will text me on text messaging. Some people will text me on, I think it's WhatsApp is the one we use. I hate it. And could we just pick a thing and just use that? This is the problem. If somebody hits me up on Facebook Messenger, I will get the notification. If somebody does this on Skype, I will get the notification on my phone. I would prefer text messages, frankly. Kind of a plain text kind of guy. I don't really, I don't know. I mean, my my wife and I use this. My kids and I use this. My kids are on iPhones and they use Snapchat with their friends. But when they want to communicate with us, you know, we use text messaging.
So I want to move on to Xbox really quickly, because this is interesting. Microsoft no longer plans to bring VR to Xbox One. And that's the kid screaming. Maybe he should go upstairs.
Sounded like a cougar sound effect.
Yeah, did you hear that?
Yeah.
I'm going to get the emails now. They're no longer bringing
VR. Someone professional, Andrew, by the way. Has anyone ever raised that issue?
I know. So unprofessional. So unprofessional.
How dare you have a family home, you jerk.
I know. It's miserable. So VR is not coming to Xbox One?
Yeah. This story, by the way, is actually about 8 days old. It's kind of weird. Like it was in game, I think it's called Game Industry Biz or whatever. And they interviewed not Phil Spencer, but some other guy from Microsoft, and about a bunch of different things. And in the course of the interview, they asked him, hey, you know, you never announced anything about VR or MR again. What's going on there? And whoever this guy was says, oh, yeah, we're not doing that. You know, and it's like, okay. Because, you know, when the Xbox One launched, I think this bugs me, because I just wrote a thing about Xbox strategy and how their real focus going forward is on the cloud service, not on hardware. And they're talking up a next gen Xbox console. I think it's important because it's kind of a migration. It's something that happens over time, and you need something that's going to be another jump before you drop the first person hardware altogether, the first party hardware.
Yeah, I mean,
my video is frozen, by the way.
It's frozen. Frozen. You're back.
No, it came back. So anyway, but I hardware is especially with Xbox, but hardware overall, I would say, you know, the Surface stuff would be included in this as well. HoloLens, whatever. They've never made money on it, right? And now that they are absolutely going to lose three generations of consoles in a row and have the capability to move forward with the cloud service stuff and kind of take the hardware out of the equation, which makes it better for the service overall over time. I mean, I realize right away it's not like a game streaming to a phone is going to be as good as an Xbox One. I know that. But I mean, over time, this is the right thing for gamers. It's the right thing for them, for sure. It's something they're set up to do and they can make money at. You kind of have to look at the other stuff you're doing in the hardware front and say, well, does this make any sense? And so here they are with the least popular video game console in the market today. They're going to spend the time and the money and the effort to bring VR or MR or whatever you want to call it to this platform. No one is going to buy this thing. Right? Yeah. I mean, and I don't mean literally, but I mean, it's going to be so unpopular. They already have the experience with Kinect and how badly that did. This thing, they have to be looking at it thinking, look, this is going to be a sub-Kinect level of success. Developers are not going to support it, because why on earth would you bother bringing games that support VR to a platform that no one's going to play those games on? And I think it's just pragmatic. They can't say it that way. I mean, and they won't. But I think that's why. And I think it makes sense. I just, you know, VR gaming is a kind of a niche inside of a niche, you know. I know that Sony has sold some. I don't know if it's 1 million or 2 million or whatever the count is now. But they've sold over 1 million of their own VR headsets for sure. But it's just... is it worth it? I mean, if Microsoft were, what's one third of a million? Like, if they sold 300,000 units of this thing, would that make any sense at all? And then there were no games, and you know, it's just I think the ecosystem's there, and I think this is them finally saying no to a bad idea, which is smart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could tell that even based on that decision making, they've kind of changed their thought processes to, you know, concepts and sticking to roadmaps and shifting with the marketplace. VR, it's still up in the air. We don't know what the future of this holds exactly, right? Overall, we don't know what the exact end result's going to be 10 years from now.
Right.
Especially for Microsoft. Right. This, you know, where do you see it going? I mean, this is an interesting conversation. E3 was happening, you know, last week. Where's VR in 10 years? Where are these consoles in 10 years? You know, Microsoft is putting out a new console in three years, right? 3 years? 21?
I think it's 2 years.
2 years?
2020, I think, yeah.
2020.
Yeah, so 3 years from the Xbox One X.
They're putting out a new console. Obviously, they're developing it now, but 10 years from today, 28, what are we going to, where's his head? Because 10 years ago, the marketplace was very different. We weren't really discussing VR and AR 10 years ago.
I don't know if it was last week or the week before, you and I had talked about my AR experience with the stars and the planets and the sky and the planes and everything. And I think you and I had heard, or if we didn't, I apologize. Someone emailed me about the plane thing where there are apps where you can see what that plane is, right? It's kind of incredible. Of course there are, right? I mean, why would I act surprised by that? I mean, of course that kind of thing exists. Is any of that like a mainstream, everyone on earth is going to do it every day kind of thing? No, but it's there and it's kind of cool. You know, there are fun AR type experiences to be had, like Pokemon Go is a good example. I always talk about this museum app that, you know, you hold up the phone to the dinosaur and on the phone you can see the dinosaur as it looked instead of the skeleton. None of those things are something you need all day long, every day, but there are other more pragmatic kind of uses of this technology. Maybe you're traveling to India or Japan or somewhere in Southeast Asia. You don't speak the language and you're out in the world and you want to know which one of the stores, well, pharmacy would probably be obvious, but you want to know what you're looking at, and they all have signs in their own language because of course they do. And you can kind of hold your phone up and Google Translate or whatever app you're using will show you in real time right over the image through the camera lens what you're looking at in your language. Like, that kind of stuff is science fiction amazing, right? Useful. Doesn't mean you need it every single day, but it's going to be a thing that's there. So you can, if you kind of follow the progression, how it worked on Android, you know, Google's first effort around AR was something called Project Trouble, and it required a specific phone platform. And of course, very few handset makers ever bothered. So they said, okay, well, we're going to make something else called AR Core. And now that's just going to be available on Android. And now all of a sudden that's starting to take off. You know, Apple helped by supporting AR very heavily in iOS first. And they kind of formalized on mobile in doing so. And I think that AR in mobile makes more sense than AR on a mixed reality headset like you would have on a Windows computer, or in a standalone kind of thing like HoloLens where you're stuck in a room and can't walk out in the world because the phone's in your pocket all the time. And it is out in the world where these kind of scenarios get exciting, right? Every example I gave, the stars, the moons, and the planets or whatever, the planes in the sky, the dinosaur in the museum, the signs in Bangladesh or wherever you are, you're out in the world, you know?
Yeah.
You have that, you know, that processing's in your power. So I think AR, MR, whatever you want to call it, not VR, I guess, MR, I guess we call it AR, becomes a feature of the platform, the mobile platform. It's just a thing. It's another one of those things you can do if you want to.
I was thinking
VR, you need a headset.
This thought came to mind at Penn Station, and I was walking in a sea of people, and I was just a random thought. And I was thinking, we talk about apps and everything. It just came to mind. I'm like, you know, in 20, 30 years, you know, this whole Google Glass concept was the beginning of essentially contact lenses, right? That's what it's going to end up being. It's going to be some sort of contact lens the AR aspect of it is going to be popping up in front of you, in front of your eyes. So you're going to see it without needing to have any kind of glasses or your phone holding it. This is where it's going to go. I mean, it's unless there's a reason why, you know, we find out that health wise it's blinding people, it's giving us money. I mean, whatever it is, but
it will happen.
You know, this turns into glasses, turns into contact lenses. I mean, that's what's going to happen. And I'm thinking, I'm like, you know what, it's not going to be all great stuff, right? Like, it's not going to be that a guy's having a heart attack and the medics have this contact lens and you're going to be able to see what their health history is without having to scramble. You know what I mean? It's going to be dating apps like Tinder. It's going to be dating. No, but I mean, that's good. But majority of it is going to be like dating apps like Tinder and guys walking around with like a single check mark on top of their heads with a little bio like, hey, or I'm like Paul, I'm sensitive and I like cats, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, my God, you know, we built these technologies.
That will happen. That will absolutely happen. It's funny that you go in that direction. I was just thinking like when I used to talk about VR headsets and the notion of this thing you kind of had to put on and it blocked the world around you. I used to talk about this thing where you would have a, it'd be like the Paris Cafe experience, right? And then if you could sit there with a cup of coffee in your hand, it could smell it. And you had that that surround sound of the cafe sounds and people coming and going and ordering things. And you could kind of look around in real time.
Yeah.
That I could do that for hours on end, you know. But
yeah.
Imagine, and this will happen. I mean, it's not that hard to imagine. You have a, maybe it's a Google Glasses kind of a thing or whatever, and you're out in the world. So it's more of an AR than a VR thing. And you're looking at Penn Station, maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're in Paris, literally.
You know, and the train schedule, bam.
Well, no, I'm sorry. This is a completely different direction, okay. But it would be almost like an educational thing. Like you could see what that thing looked like in different periods of time.
That's awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you imagine that? Right. Yeah. So the Paris streets as they would have looked 100 years ago or whatever it might be, or Penn Station as it might have looked 50 years ago or whatever. And again, these things, they're cool. And everything we just said is cool, right? None of it's necessary, you know, but it's all cool. None of it is something you would need every single day. But I think that the uses of it are interesting enough and useful enough that this stuff will persist. Like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, VR is a little tougher.
I'm saying this as a joke. It's a half-assed joke, but it's also half-assed serious, right? It's 50 years from now, 60 years from now. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, everybody could be ugly. You can have everybody looking like whatever you want them to look. Think about that, right? You could program your own image that everybody sees you as if you're wearing these things. If 90% of the population, 80% of the population is wearing these augmented, you know, contact lenses for a better life, who cares? You live in a
more likely, terrible, you know, celebrities will license their images, right? And then you'll be able to. You can have relations with them.
Wait, Paul,
you know.
Are you saying I could be Kim Kardashian? Because that is the moment.
I want
to be a Kardashian.
But you want the person you're with to be the Kardashian.
No, like that, no. They're dead behind the eyes.
I'm just saying you could imagine this being the Kardashians of the future will be the people who are licensing their images for this exact use.
Yeah. You know? By the way, there's nothing sadder than drinking a Budweiser at 1:30 in the afternoon out of a Mets mug right now. This is the epitome of sadness. this drink right here is the epitome of sadness. I love like futurists. You know, like I love the writers like that. You know, you have this. And a lot of them, you know, they had the ability to kind of go look and foresee what the future was leading us into. And for us now, it's easy. You know, we could speculate all we want because we have, you know, we have the inner workings already. We have the tools to predict where it's headed. These guys had nothing when they wrote
The Jules Vernes and the H.G. Wells of the world, Isaac Asimov did a lot of this kind of stuff. You know, you could watch something like Star Trek and they get into an elevator and they say something and it takes them to where they want to go. All that stuff is happening. You know, I mean, the VR and maybe AR are kind of the holodeck of Star Trek, right? Where you can put yourself in some kind of environment. But the truth is, in many ways, the holodeck doesn't go far enough. It in some ways, it's kind of interesting how limited it is compared to how it will be.
Yeah.
I'm glad in a way that I was born before this. Also,
are you really? You know what I think about that? I always think about, you know, what I by the way, this is my favorite discussion to have with you. Like all this, the speculating on the future and where we're headed, because
think about how old is your daughter now?
Two. She's graduating tomorrow, by the way.
Yeah, graduating. Yeah,
she's graduating.
Everyone graduating. That's amazing.
Everybody gets a graduation for every grade gets a graduation every year.
Sure. All right. I'm not going to get on that one. But your daughter is two. My daughter is 17, and she just got her license. Right.
I'm sorry.
So, what this means is she can drive a car, and there's a car that she will drive, and is in fact driving. In fact, she could be driving it right now. Your daughter may just be at the right point in time where driving a car is something that most people of her age don't do, right? There'll be cars, right? Obviously. self-driving cars and whatnot. But the number of people who drive is already going down as a percentage of the population, right? A lot of people, there were people of my generation who, for some reason, they lived in cities, whatever it might be, never got a license or at some point stopped getting licenses or stopped renewing their licenses. More and more young people don't need to have licenses. By the time your kid is old enough, it just may not be a thing.
It may not be a thing. Listen, I was thinking, it's so funny. I was having this conversation when I started driving, right? People bought manual cars. I mean, they still do, right? They still do. But it was a common thing for you to learn on a manual still. Like my father had.
And there's still an attitude about it, right? Like, yeah. You need to know this for some reason.
Some reason.
But you don't.
Just in case.
When I was a kid, if you rented a U-Haul truck, right, which I didn't as a kid, but my parents did, like when we moved, you had to know how to drive a stick because those things were all stick shift at the time. And if you went to Europe for many years and you rented a car, you had to know how to drive a stick. All those cars were stick shifts. After a while, it kind of shifted so that you could pay a little bit more and get an automatic. And I'm not sure how it works now, but I suspect the selection of automatics is pretty huge in Europe now from car rental companies. But those things kind of change. But the whole attitude that, like, you are lesser of a human being if you don't know how to drive a stick shift.
Dude, I would get that from my friends. They would bust chops all the time. What, you don't know how to drive sticks?
But that's like saying, well, you need to know how to change your oil, or you need to know how to take apart the engine in your car and rebuild it from scratch for some reason.
A friend of mine said the best thing was, I think I was like 18, 19, and I use this line all the time. He, I forgot what car he bought, but he bought, I mean, it was a nice car. It was a nice car. Let's say a Mercedes or a BMW, for example. And a couple of my friends that were saying, like, oh, but you didn't get it in stick. You bought that car, but you didn't buy it in stick, and you got an automatic. And he turned around and he said, no, I was older. I think I was like 25 because this kid was making money. He turned around and said, listen, for $50,000, this car better wipe my ass.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
not going to. He goes, why would I spend that money to have to drive? And he goes, I drive in Manhattan. He goes, I drive to the city. I'm going to drive stick for what? Why?
It's awful driving a stick in traffic.
Oh, it's terrible. It's so, but that is a concept that my kids will never know. They will never have to learn how to drive a manual.
It's funny.
Even, they won't even think about it.
Every action movie ever made, right? Whoever the star is, Tom Cruise or Arnold Schwarzenegger, that you can pick out any of the Bruce Willis, whatever. When they have a car, it's always a classic muscle car. Always. You know what I mean? And like, it's like a trope. It's, I think the same kind of American mentality about cars is what dictates why those guys that are the people who write those stories, write it so that the way we can identify the guy who knows what he's doing is because, of course, he drives an American classic muscle car. It probably has like a four speed on the floor kind of thing with like one of those handle grip shifters. And, cause that's a real man, right? He changes his own oil. He does. He doesn't let anyone go near that thing.
I remember I was driving my grandfather's car one time. He was teaching me how to drive. And all he kept screaming to me was, press the embrayage, the embrayage, the embrayage. And I'm like, what the fuck is an embrayage? It's a clutch.
Oh, jeez.
The embrayage. Right. That's how I learned. I learned to drive a manual from a 70-something-year-old senile. I mean, like, senile man. Screaming in French that I need to press the embrayage. Push embrayage. Push embrayage. That was
I could be wrong about this. I heard this from a third party, but somebody told me, and I don't know if it's 2018 or 2019, that a backup camera is now standard equipment on all cars in the United States.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
So the interesting thing about that is my wife's car has one. My car, which is not now my daughter's car, does not. It's just, old. It's too old or whatever. When you use something like that, you grow to rely on it. And I think that might be the next example of the manual shift thing. It's like, you need to know how to, parallel park without a backup camera. And it's like, why? What's the difference?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm car shopping now for Jess's car, and we're looking for cars for her lease. I you know what my car is? before somebody calls me Daddy Warbucks and Andrew's, oh, this is where the Patreon money's going. I drive a 2001 Subaru Impreza RS. That is my everyday car.
Okay.
That was my first car that I bought, and that will be my last car. I will be buried with this car. I have no reason to get a car, but my wife gets the nice car, right? We have the kids. We need something safe. So we're looking at a Volvo.
Yeah.
We're looking at the XC90. And I was having this discussion last night, because right now my wife is a monster when it comes to negotiating. Like, she's the worst, which is great for us, or terrible for the man that's having to deal with her. So we're negotiating, and she's like, I don't need the car to brake for me. I don't need the car to stay in the lane for me. I want to do all of it. And they're like, this is how cars come now. This is how it is. And she's like, I don't want it, though. These are the equivalents of all this, like the backup sensor, right? Some people don't need it, but it's standard. This is the evolution of cars. This
people
is where
think they don't need it. I'm telling you, though, the car's back into spots now. You don't even need the camera. They just do it. You just press a button and it parallel parks it for you. It's got all the sensors. It knows where stuff is. It's the perfect distance from the curb. It's the perfect distance from the two other cars.
You know, 20 years ago, we're supposed to still have flying cars. I'm waiting for that.
Yeah, but this is how the automated cars, whatever they're called, self-driving cars happen. I mean, these are the little steps. We have lane detection things and automatic collision prevention and so forth.
You know,
no, but it's leading to the inevitable conclusion. And there's always going to be the old timers like us who are going to be freaked out at, well, you know, we don't have freedom anymore. We can't drive, you know, whatever. But I mean, driving is it's a fairly, you know, in the span of human history, the ability to drive a car, which we will one day realize was the dumbest thing we ever let people do. if you've seen anyone in there driving, you know, we'll eventually realize that.
Yeah. I do want to take a moment. I want to continue this conversation because I love talking to Paul about this. And a lot of you guys are engaged with this, which is always great. And I love hearing about it from you guys. I want to take a moment and talk about our new sponsor, and that's Mac Weldon. I am so glad that they're a sponsor because I've been buying their clothing for some time now. All these great conversations happen at bars. I was at a bar and we were talking about t-shirts, and I was talking to this guy, random guy. We were just talking about t-shirts, and I said, you know, I have a uniform that I wear every day. It's a black t-shirt and blue skinny jeans and a pair of Pumas. This is my gimmick. This is my gear. This is what I wear all the time. He's like, oh, you know, I had the problem. We were talking about the wear on these t-shirts. So the second you wash it a couple times, it falls apart because they're cheap. They're not built well. They're not high quality t-shirts. And I ended up telling him, like, you know, I wish I had a good company to go to. And he brought up Mack Weldon. This is a while ago. And when they came to me, I said, you know what? This is great because I use their products. It's great. It's phenomenal. So what is Mack Weldon? They make, it's the ultimate comfort in underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants. Their t-shirts, however, are my absolute favorite because this is a Mack Weldon shirt. Look at this. This is built really well. It's funny. I ordered 8 black t-shirts and 4 gray t-shirts. My wife gets this package. She's like, why did you order so many? I said, because I wear it every day. This is my thing. This is what I'm going to wear. It's actually amazing. It includes some of their stuff. The Silver Line underwear and shirts are made with natural materials that eliminate odor. It's also favored by the Olympic athletes, U.S. Special Forces, and NASA. NASA's using it. You know it's a good quality stuff. They also have, like, swim trunks, and they have awesome stuff. Sweatpants, sweatgear, great, great stuff. Here's a great thing. Go to MackWeldon.com. Use the promo code. Use the offer code Andrew at checkout. You get $20 off your first order. I highly suggest it. This is one of the best t-shirts I've bought, and I've spoken about my obsession with t-shirts. And I'm really glad that these guys are here and these guys, I could talk about them because it's a good company. I bought the t-shirts, I bought the socks, and I bought the swim trunks because I'm going to Barbados in a couple of weeks. So it was absolutely perfect timing that these guys signed up with us, and I absolutely love it. I've already been recommending it to friends, so that's a good sign here. MackWeldon.com. Use the code Andrew at checkout, and you get 20% off your first order. Paul, you're a t-shirt guy. T-shirt and jeans.
Yes.
Yeah, your t-shirt. Yes. I think you would benefit from this. Mack Weldon, send Paul like a little kit. Let's see what we could do. We can match, Paul. And now all you need to do is buy skinny jeans and a pair of Pumas and grow your beard and dye it jet black. And we could be twinsies. Mm. It'll be perfect. MackWeldon.com, 20% off your first order. You don't want to be twinsies before with me, Paul?
Get started again.
Yeah.
Two things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll go as you for Halloween this year. That would be
and
fun.
Maybe I'll go as you.
Okay. I just did something really crazy. Like I did like the key combination for back in the browser.
Okay.
And because we're filming this in, or, you know, recording this through the browser, I disappeared for a second.
I didn't even know.
And I thought, well, the funny thing is I just did forward and it went right back into the video. Like it's kind of, yeah.
So that's a cool thing. So it worked. I guess we could talk about what I use now. So this is vMix. The software that we use is vMix for our production. If I could pull it up here, Suncast. Let's see if we could do this. So this is what it looks like when we're doing the show. So I could, you know, I'm.
It's almost like a virtual mixer. I wonder why they call it vMix.
Yeah. So these are all the audio channels that we have. So it's doing automatic mix minusing of the audio, and you're calling in directly into the software here. Directly in.
Through a web browser.
Through a web browser. Now, and you're sending 720p30, I think, or whatever you're capable of sending. If you actually used the software on your end, which I should get it to you, you could do 1080p video to me. You could actually send me 1080p video straight, but this software is phenomenal. The guy's been working on it, Martin, and I can't remember his business partner, but I know Martin, he's been working on it for like, God, forever. And they pretty much surpassed everybody on the market about 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Like they really kicked into high gear. And this the ability to do this, you know, it's WebRTC. Right. It really changed a lot. It changed the game because it made my life a lot easier. Like I technically don't ever have to have any Skype machines anymore. I could turn all those Skype machines off. And I, you know, if I ever showed you my server room, which they're still running, it's on fire. My basement is like a sauna because I have these old AMDs that I need to replace. And I'm thinking, I'm like, maybe I'm not going to replace them. What's the point? You know, I could have up to as many people as I want on this. I could have isolated channels. Like if I switch the camera off of you, I can mute your audio, but you could still hear me. Like there's a lot that you could do with this. Very customizable. Yep. It's called vMix, and these guys have been great with us. I probably was one of the first people that started, you know, advocating about them as a really superior. And like we use Wirecast for many, many years, and they just, you know, sometimes you just slow down a little bit. And they were one of those companies. They're great people, but it just didn't meet our needs anymore.
Right.
It's a great piece of software, so I'll recommend it to anybody. Paul. What are you using? So I want to know from you.
What am I using?
Yeah. What are you using? So somebody.
What do you mean, Andrew?
So somebody was asking me, because we've been talking about phones and the applications that we use. What are the most used apps that you're using? I got to ask this.
Actually,
last
you know, it's
week.
Funny you mentioned that. Okay. I need to look. There must be a way in Android for it to tell me that, right? Because I have my own ideas about what I think I probably use the most. Yeah. But actually, you must be able to do it. So let me look at settings and. I was just thinking about this very thing because this week I've been testing the Microsoft launcher.
Okay.
And
how do you like it?
I like it a lot. It's it's weird for me because I kind of prefer the stock interfaces on things when they work. Right. And the Pixel launcher works well. There's not a huge, you know, rationale for me changing this thing up. I know the markers on Android. It's one of the nice things for them that you can do this. But I don't have a lot of experience with other launchers per se. You know, I've used the, whatever the Samsung one is called. OnePlus has their own launcher, obviously. Huawei does. They have their own Android UI. I like the stock stuff. But the Microsoft one, which I do have a lot of experience with, is really customizable, and I think that's neat. I don't see a way to see the top used apps. I have the most recent apps. That's unfortunate. I would like to know what they are. My most recent apps are Microsoft Launcher, Google, the app, Microsoft News, because I was testing it, and Skype. Interesting. There's no real top apps. Well,
so I'll look at mine, right? While you do that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm only going on my phone based on what I use regularly. Mm-hmm. I don't have any I don't have anything that like I could be like, well, I recommend this app. You know, like everything is standard that I use. Like I use Reddit. I use this game called Falling Balls. It's literally, I mean, it's like a stupid game for the, like, it just brings me down after work and when I'm on the train. This is literally what it is. Well, let me show you.
If I can pull What's the phone you're using now?
iPhone 7. Oh, well, I have the Galaxy. So essentially, you take this ball and you bounce and you got to get the numbers to drop on that.
I've seen my daughter playing this as well.
Yeah. It's a stupid game, but I use that every day. And then I use like some photo editors. I do Snapchat, you know, for work. I have LifeX for the lights that I use. Twitter, Instagram, Sign Now, because I have to do a lot of sign documents, so I do Sign Now on this. Arlo for my security cameras. Dropbox. I never use Chrome ever on my iPhone. I never use the Gmail app. I don't really use Google Drive. Let's see. I mean, it's essentially, it's the basics. I really don't use a lot of these apps.
According to the Microsoft launcher, I use Messages, Google Inbox, Play Store, Camera, the Google app, which I have to run manually now, Chrome and Edge. I'm transitioning to Edge, trying that out, and Instagram. All of those apps are actually on my home screen, the first screen. I also have Twitter Lite on there. Duolingo I use every single day. I think it depends on what I'm doing. Like if I'm home, I'm not out in the world, I use Duolingo every day. I use normally on a normal Google phone, Android phone, you can go over to the left and there's the feed, which is from the Google app. I actually use that to find stuff to read. And because I go into articles, it's getting smarter about the stuff that I like. So now it's full of like whatever happens to be big in my personal world at the time. Like there's a bunch of Star Wars stuff in there or whatever, you know. And I use the Pocket app to read that stuff, and I use it across tablets and phone. I try to read more on like an iPad, but I use the New York Times app every day, which I hate, and I will be leaving this newspaper this year. I can't stand this fucking thing anymore.
Are you using the MSN app?
I hate them. So I put that back on because, you know, back in the day, I liked the MSN news app. It's pretty clean. Google News I used for a while. They just revamped it. I hate it now. There's something called Smart News, which I can sort of recommend. There's a lot of ads, but they have like a reading view, which I really like on the articles.
Are you telling me you don't get all your news from Infowars.com?
No.
Alex Jones is not your source for news. Okay.
Well, I subscribed to the Wall Street Journal for probably, I think it was 18 years, and I canceled it because their tech reporting was freaking terrible. And now the New York Times is just as bad, and I can't deal with it.
Well, you know what? You know what's that? I mean, this kind of goes into what I was going to talk about. I went to a very popular tech news site, okay? And I'm one of these people, I like to separate, and we've spoken about this. I don't like mixing anything with my tech news. Like, I don't like politics in my tech news. I don't like crock pot reviews and dishwasher reviews.
But I mean, if you could pick any news aggregator app, right? Microsoft News, Smart News, Google News, I guess. And, you know, you kind of go in there and there's a tab for technology and you kind of go down the list and it's, let me find it before I say it. The Microsoft one, it's funny. I might be going back to this. This is a good one. You know, as good as these things can be. Why can't I find tech? Here it is. So it's, you know, CNET, Engadget, The Verge, PGR. Yeah. I kind of wish there's probably a way to make sure you don't see certain stuff, but it's okay. You know, it's fine.
Yeah, I went to CNET today because I was trying to, you know, see what's going on. It's part of my routine. I'm looking at their site and this is what I see. Amazon Fire Cube. Fine. Great. Okay, technology. 2019 Volvo S60, born in the USA. Okay, I guess you could talk about it. The immigration debate. Okay, I don't know what that has to do with.
Seeing that as a site is ridiculous.
Now you've gone into a whole different topic. Then here we go. Yeah. Then it goes into, these are the best coolers you could buy this summer.
Yeah, and here's the top
right under that, the Instapot Max review. Save money and don't buy this pot. Supreme Court tax ruling. I get everything is kind of connected to technology, but you are stretching it. And you know what's happening? You're creating so much noise on these sites where I can't find anything other than what the front page is showing.
Yeah. I don't read CNET, right? I'll see some of their articles just, you know, through aggregators, and that's enough, because I don't care about any of that other stuff. You know, somebody, you know, was bitching and moaning at me yesterday about I retweeted a political thing. It's like, we don't follow you to see what you care about politics. You know, it's like, I don't give a shit.
But you didn't even post it. You didn't even write it.
This is my personal Twitter feed. It's like, I'm not going to write about it on my site. Subscribe to that. I'm sorry. I'm a human being too. I don't like to see kids taken away from their parents. If you disagree with that, you know, fascinating, but I'm not following you on Twitter either. So I just don't, I wouldn't like when 9/11 happened, for example. Here's a really extreme example.
God, I'm all of the sites about 9/11. It always goes down this road for me.
It always, you can't escape. Ends
up, yeah.
When 9/11 happened, a lot of the blogs that were around at the time that were doing what I was doing, like ActiveWin and Beta News and whatever else was around at the time, started writing about 9/11. They were like, it's, you know, is everyone okay? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, my job as I see it, and I would do the same today, is not to write about that stuff, right? It's this awful thing is happening in the world, and you're coming here because you want to know about personal technology or some Windows thing or whatever it might be. I'm going to keep doing that. That's what I'm going to do. But you know what? I was impacted by 9/11 like anyone else is. I have some personal stories. My sister is a flight attendant, should have been on the plane, you know, that crashed into the towers, one of them. My friend at the time was going into the city as it was happening on a bus. He texted me and said, hey, there's some smoke coming out of the building. And I saw on TV what was going on, and I told him not to go into New York. You know, like a lot of people, I have these stories, but I'm not going to, there's a personal and there's a work thing or whatever. And I think a site like CNET, which is a little too broad, is not, it's like they don't quite understand what they are. You know, they're not a tech enthusiast blog run by three kids, but they're also not CBS News, even though I think they might be owned by CBS. But
they're owned by, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't, okay, interesting coincidence. But they're not, they're kind of in the middle. And I just, personally, I have no use for that kind of a site.
But you know what it is? Like, I'll tell you, I got a weird package here. Oh, my goodness. Jessica ordered a very nice Fitbit holder. I wonder how much she paid for it. It's the, it's like a gold Fitbit charm thing. That's nice. Well, you know, I never get, in all these years that I've been doing this, and I'm pretty vocal about politics. Like, I could get in the discussion with people. Because I don't subscribe to any political belief, and I'll just say, you know, I have my own belief, and it's my own business, and it's what I believe in, and I never want to push that conversation to anybody because it never ends well. Unless you're with someone that follows your ideology, it's always going to be something that pisses someone off. So I stay far, far away from it. I'd rather get to know people outside of politics. Sure. And you know, and I've said this a couple times, you know, I've never once made a political post publicly ever. I mean, I've so much self-control with this. Even when I want to yell and scream, I never do. You know, everything that has happened, now I want to make a comment, but I don't do that. Brian Brushwood made a post after the election, after Trump won. And he wrote this very, very articulate post about, you know, things like this should unify a country. We should look at the people next to us and not look at them based on color, based on blah. It was just like a love everybody post, you know, like before we start reacting and getting mad at the other side, let's not let this change how you are with the people that you see every day. You know, it was a very nice post. I retweeted it and I wrote something like hugs, you know, like something stupid. This guy lost his mind. Elitist New Yorker. You're you know, you you're rich, which I don't know where he even came up with that. All the money, and you have no idea. You're white, which I guess, depending on who you ask, maybe some days. Some days. My family fled Iran, you know, in 1979, 78, and they came here. So
you're on the white spectrum.
I am on the white spectrum. I lean towards white, but, you know, it much the like how we look at gender now. Spectrum. Much like how we look at gender now, there's like 40 genders. I lean towards the white side more than the brown side. It depends. It depends on the day. But I'm like, listen, dude. I'm like, I get it. I get the whole thing. But I'm trying to be positive. You know what I mean? And he's like, no, you have no idea what it's like. I'm sure your family's never suffered and you never. And I'm like, a lot of assumptions here, dude. You know? And I just diffused the whole thing. And I thought to myself, I wrote the nicest post. I retweeted one of the nicest things I had ever heard, and I made the nicest comment I could think, and this was the reaction. God forbid I ever went on Twitter and I actually said something political. You know, it's nuts. It really is. No words sometimes with the way that people react to things.
Yeah, so I don't even know how to say this. I get a lot of the same kind of...
I would like everybody right now to take their pen and draw a line, okay? One side being very white and one side being very black. And where do I fall on that scale for you? And I want you to send this to me. I want to know where I fall on the brown scale. I also got another person that came up to me. Paul, this was great. I got an email and he goes, listen, I'm so sorry that you have to deal with stuff. And I said, why? He goes, because you're Arab. And I said, I'm not. And he goes, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. He was mortified. So I think that's like it's hot right now, you know, politically. And a lot of people make assumptions. My whole point is, why don't we pull back a little bit with how we communicate, especially online? It's a guttural response a lot of times. I'm just going down my feed now and I'm just seeing everything that's happening. But you don't get a lot of that, do you?
We have exactly 0 minutes for me to discuss this topic. Okay. I mean, it's,
God,
it's people assume that I'm some kind of a liberal something, something. And the truth is I'm not a right wing something, something either. Sure. It depends on the topic. It depends on, you know, whatever. The times I've spoken out against something that where people describe it as political, it's often just common sense. You know, if you think about the way that I write about technology, I apply that thinking to everything. And so if you come out against like Trump or this immigration policy, whatever, people perceive that as some kind of a political thing. Well, you would say that you're a liberal pussy or whatever. And it's like, no, I'm just a human being. And I disagree with this kind of thing. And it's not political. There's no politics to it. I'm not going to do something morally wrong because I happen to be affiliated with some political party, which I'm not, by the way. Literally registered as an independent, by the way.
There's more people like you and I.
They're quiet, but they're quiet people. Yeah. So the problem is when people complain about something like this, the stuff we're talking about here, they are, in fact, hyper political and hyper opinionated and hyper in one area, you know, on one side of the fence. And they see everything through their lens of bias. Where what I'm doing, whether it's, I'll just use the immigration thing because it just happened. Yeah, sure. It's like, this is not because I'm some Obama loving liberal, you know, Massachusetts, JFK, whatever you think I am. It's because it's wrong. You know, it has nothing to do with politics. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. And
I think that
it says more about the person complaining than it does about me.
I know we have no time for this. God, I got into it with a friend of mine that's a journalist, essentially. They don't write about technology. They don't write about any, you know, they're not a political writer. They got very political over the last couple months. And I'm realizing it's because he's able to monetize on it. He has no interest politically into anything. You know, he's picked a side and that's what he's going to. And I got into a whole thing with him about how he's pretty much saying stuff that he knows nothing about. And because of the way that the internet is and it's reactionary with everything that we do and everything that we say and it's thoughtless posts, this is the new way of communicating. And I don't know how I feel about the fact that I could go. Like last night, I made a post. I went to the fucking diner and I made a post, and that was at the moment. There was no thought to that post. But imagine how dangerous that gets on a different level, you know, on a very quick reactionary level. And if it's some important message that you're posting, maybe you should have the decorum to say to yourself, you know, maybe this is not the moment for this. I think we're in this weird transitional period on how we deliver messages. And that's why I use iMessage. That this was a sponsored ad from Apple.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's an interesting discussion to have, but obviously we're out of time. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. You can go to Paul's site, therot.com. I do like this discussion about journalism and how
journalism. You know, journalism's a tough word because in many ways, I don't know. Like I don't write straight up news stories.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm.
Well, sometimes you do, and sometimes it's an op-ed piece. I mean, that it's a mesh of it.
Yeah. A lot of what I've done. One of the earliest decisions I made was I wasn't going to talk to experts. I was going to provide my own opinion, and there's a certain amount of commentary that comes in. I think one of the reasons some people like what I write is because I provide that kind of opinion part of it. Maybe there's a sense of humor, maybe whatever it is. So is that straight journalism? Absolutely not. You know, is it a level above the blogger regurgitation of a press release or yes, but it's a different thing. So I don't know what to call it. It's journalism makes it sound a little more self-important than it is, you know,
but wait, Paul, but in order for you to write these stories, right, you need to have your context. You need to do your due diligence. You need to get your sources. You need to fact check. You need to double check everything. You're not a site that you go to for news and rumors, you know, you essentially double check and triple check everything that you're posting. If it's a breaking news story, if it's some sort of information that was handed to you, that's what I consider journalism. Not necessarily me getting a press release or me seeing a story on therot.com, then putting it on andrewzarian.com and saying sources said.
It's just we don't have time for this. It's too complicated. There's an ethical standard. In other words, if I just blindly supported Microsoft and everything they did, that is not journalism, no matter how good I write, no matter how many sources I get for whatever. And those people exist, and that's not journalism. But what I do, you know, a lot of times I would, you know, you could argue it's not journalism either. You know, something different. But
it's interesting. Whatever. All right. Time to go. Therot.com, all things Paul Therot. Go there, gfknetwork.com. Subscribe to the podcast. We're everywhere podcasts are available. And we are out of time. So we will see you all next time. Take care.